Now, in the past month, two prominent Republican senators announced they won't seek re-election. The move leaves their seats potentially vulnerable to competition from Democrats.
And their future departure could spell trouble for the party as it grapples with infighting and a loss of confidence.
And this all comes at a time when a recent poll conducted by the Pew Research Center found that Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are less confident in the future of the party. This could all potentially spell trouble for the GOP going forward.
Lily Gorin is with us now. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Her published books include Women in the White House and Mad Men in Politics. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
Well, let's start with these announced departures of Republican Senators Bob Corker of Tennessee and Jeff Flake of Arizona. If we're reading the tea leaves here, what do you think these departures could mean?
Well, I mean, you have to also possibly throw into that mix the likelihood that John McCain, also of Arizona, will probably not run for re-election, but he was recently re-elected, so he's in the Senate for a while. But what you are seeing with regard to Corker and Flake, and to a degree McCain, are some high-profile Republican, long-standing Republicans in elected office who are choosing to leave. And in the case of Flake and Corker, they were getting some pretty serious challenges in primaries in their states, ones that they may not have been able to weather. And some of the sort of track record for some of these sort of more traditional, I don't know that they're really moderate, but establishment conservatives like Eric Cantor and Richard Lugar from Indiana, and who were challenged in primaries and lost. And so what you have is a possible, you know, sort of situation where a number of these Republicans who are also not necessarily on board at this point with the Trump administration. And what's interesting with regard to Corker was that he was an early and fairly consistent supporter of candidate Trump. But he has become really dissatisfied with the Trump administration and seemingly also with the president himself, particularly in regard to foreign policy. And Corker is the chair of the Senate Foreign Policy Committee.
And I'm wondering how you think these Republicans who are not running again are viewed both by their fellow legislators and by the public. Are these Republicans who have the courage to speak their conscience, or are they politicians afraid of facing a challenger picked by Steve Bannon?
Well, I mean, certainly some people are suggesting that they are afraid of facing challengers in situations where, in Flake's case, apparently polling was very much indicating that he was going to have a significant challenge, and he was likely, although, you know, it's hard to predict, would lose in the primary. But Flake had also published a book this summer that was pretty much critical of Trump. So he's been fairly consistent. And so in the case of these, the Republican senators, and again, they're pretty high profile. They have been able to and have long had a lot of attention focused on them. And they've been combative with the president from their party. And that's, you know, again, something that when you have majority control by one party in the House and the Senate and the White House, it should be an opportunity for a lot of legislation to come through that everybody is in agreement on, and to move a sort of president's agenda forward. And what we've seen over the last, you know, 8 months since the inauguration, but even possibly before then, since Trump's election, is that there isn't necessarily a Trump unifying the Republican Party. And on some level, it looks to observers and academics that Trump and the Republican Party, or parts of the Republican Party, are very antagonistic, and that there's, to some degree, maybe not warfare, but really quite a lot of tension within the party that has majority control, you know, in two of the three branches of government.
And you can hear some of that tension in what Senator Flake said when he announced that he wouldn't seek re-election. Here he is on the Senate floor.
We were not made great as a country by indulging in or even exalting our worst impulses, turning against ourselves, glorifying in the things that divide us, and calling fake things true and true things fake. And we did not become the beacon of freedom in the darkest corners of the world by flouting our institutions and failing to understand just how hard-won and vulnerable they are.
Almost hearing his voice, I think, shake at the end of that, very emotional and, as I understand, pretty unprecedented. Can you put that into context? How big a deal is a statement like that?
That statement is not the norm. And, you know, I saw something about it in my Twitter feed when it first happened, and I'd been in classes. And then, you know, I sort of said that Jeff Flake wasn't running for reelection. And then I saw something about the speech. And so I went and I watched the speech and didn't read it. And in watching it and listening to him, you're right. His voice is extremely emotional. It's clearly a very heartfelt speech. He ends it, he concludes it with quoting Lincoln's second inaugural, which is again at the end of the Civil War, and asking for, you know, a unity to come into the country after our Civil War. And Flake makes reference to that during the course of the speech. And again, this is a kind of significant and very statesman-like oratory on the floor of the Senate. And again, we have had speeches on the floor of the Senate to this effect, but it's not normal, and it's usually not during times of peace. Also, they're usually more often, you know, sort of oratory of this kind that you hear as we're about to enter into war or have something to do with a war.
We're talking to Lily Gorin right now from Carroll University in Waukesha, and she's with us right now to talk about the future of the Republican Party. And you were talking about how there is a lot of shifting ground within the party right now, a lot of animosity among different factions, it seems like. And so I wonder if you think the Republican Party, is it in the act? Are we watching it splintering from what we think of as the establishment party to something new, maybe something more aligned with populism or what some people are calling Trumpism?
Well, until there's another party that is, you know, Republicans sort of leaving the party itself and starting or moving into another party, I think that what you see is a kind of combat if inside the Republican Party for the direction that it will go, and not only with regard to policy, but also dispositionally. And that's been part of what Flake and Corker and to a degree, when he's been critical, Lindsey Graham, Senator from South Carolina, and McCain, and even people like Susan Collins, that have been sort of talking dispositionally, that the party, and to a degree also in that regard, the president, in particular, and their disposition, or their questions about his disposition and his attitude towards the party and the country, and that's been a big significant part of the critique, because in a lot of ways, a lot of the proposals or potential proposals for policy shifts or agenda changes are ones that many of these Republican senators are supportive of. But it's to some degree giving voice to anti-Semitism or opening the door for anti-Semitism and some of the racism that we've seen in places like Charlottesville, and what the president's leadership or lack thereof have indicated to many of these senators and House members and other elected officials, that's not the Republican Party that they want to be part of.
What kind of role do you think that Steve Bannon has in what we're seeing happen now? Former White House chief strategist, now an executive again at Breitbart News, who has, it seems as though, you know, he's got in his sights Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and that establishment wing of the party. And I wonder what role you see him playing. Do you think it's being overplayed? What his influence is, and where do you think it could go?
Well, I don't know if it's overplayed at this point, because it's hard to know exactly what that influence will be. He has indicated that he would like to have a number of candidates running against people like Jeff Flake. And there was a candidate who was running against Jeff Flake in the primary, who was supported by Bannon. But doing that across many different Senate races where you have incumbent senators who are running for re-election, and essentially to have them, quote, primaried. And so Bannon has been recruiting individuals in a variety of states. Apparently, he has been raising funds from some of the big donors to Trump, this Mercer family, among others, and possibly trying to, you know, sort of get to depose, as it were, the Republican, the sitting, quote, establishment Republican in a number of places, and have them replaced by, at least on the Republican side of the ticket, by somebody who is, you know, more in line with Trump dispositionally as well as in terms of policy.
Lily Gorin stays with us. She is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha, and she's with us to talk about the future of the GOP.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you see for the future of the Republican Party? Is it Donald Trump's party now, or is it something different than it was 2 years ago? If you voted for President Trump, what are your thoughts on his influence in the party? Do you support efforts to hold primary campaigns against sitting senators who aren't enthusiastic enough about President Trump and his agenda? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
And we'll continue our conversation on Central Time in just a bit.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're continuing our conversation now about the future of the Republican Party with Lily Gorin. She's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha.
You can join in with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the announcements by Senators Corker and Flake that they are not going to run for re-election, and their criticism in that process of President Trump and his leadership style? What do you see for the future of the Republican Party? Do you think that Republicans should get in line behind a Republican president, or do you worry that President Trump is changing the Republican Party for the worse? You can join in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
And Lily, House Speaker Paul Ryan recently spoke at a New York dinner, and he pulled some punches with the president there, which isn't terribly surprising given the dinner, but some of the jokes were a little more pointed. Here's a sample.
I want to promise you, though, because I've heard a few stories about how the dinner went last year. So just, I want to put your minds at ease. You can relax about my remarks. I know last year that Donald Trump offended some people. I know his comments, according to critics, went too far. Some said it was unbecoming of a public figure, and they said that his comments were offensive. Well, thank God he's learned his lesson.
Some remarks from Paul Ryan there at the Al Smith dinner in New York. And Lily, what are you hearing that?
Well, you know, the Al Smith dinner is supposed to be an opportunity to poke fun at particularly elected leaders. You know, last year, I believe that Trump was there and Obama, I think, was there. I don't know if Hillary Clinton was there or not, but it is this kind of a roast, if you will. And so Paul Ryan, who isn't known to be a jokester, was, you know, it has also had a kind of, I don't want to say tortured, but difficult and sometimes tense relationship with Trump. And so he was, in fact, kind of surfing on some of the general feeling with regard to Trump and Trump's disposition. And, you know, a lot of what Paul Ryan himself have critiqued Trump for, which is, you know, to some degree, his occasionally less than presidential conduct.
I want to take a caller now at 800-642-1234 as we take a look at the shifting ground right now within the Republican Party. We've got Brian with us in Wonder Lake, Illinois. Brian, hi.
Hey, that's a Chicago greeting. Hey.
What do you think, Brian?
Hey, the man won a year ago. So has he done anything that's going to make him unelectable in 3 years? Has he done anything to alienate the people that voted for him in the last election? And I would question whether that could be proved. Of course, California or Illinois, that always is Democratic, you know, they're not going to like him, or Washington State, you know, speaking of impeachment. But as long as he carries Ohio and all the states that he carried the last time, he's going to be president again. You know, and Paul Ryan, he never liked him in the first place.
All right, Brian, thank you for that call. And Brian is looking ahead and wondering about Donald Trump's prospects in the next presidential election. And I guess that's a question. Has the president done anything that would displease his base, the people who got him elected in the first place?
Well, Trump was elected by a little bit more than his base. He was elected by his base, which has been pretty supportive and continues to be very supportive of him. But he was also elected by sort of the Republicans in general, Republicans in Wisconsin, Republicans in Ohio, Republicans in Pennsylvania, Republicans in Tennessee, and so forth. And so the question is, the Republicans who voted for him a year ago, will they all be willing to vote for him again? Because it's unlikely that he has persuaded many people who didn't vote for him to go along with him. Now, that could change over the course of 3 years, obviously, and we are a long way out from 2020. But if you have high-profile Republicans like Corker, who, again, was quite supportive of candidate Trump, sort of saying, you know, I'm not supporting this fellow, and I don't know who Corker will vote for, obviously, and I wouldn't know it in 3 years from now. But that's the kind of part of the election equation that remains kind of amorphous. If you alienate too many of your own people, which Flake and Corker are among, then it's hard to put back together that electoral coalition among the voters.
Right, and how do you see this playing out a little closer than 2020 and 2018 in the midterm elections?
Well, I mean, that again remains to be seen, but you've seen some recent polling with regard to some softness among those Republicans, not necessarily, again, with Trump's loyal base, but among people who voted for him. He was a Republican standard bearer. They're a Republican. And there's been some sort of a little bit of a decrease in the poll numbers with regard to continued both optimism about the Trump administration among those voters, and also whether or not they would continue to support him and the Republican Party in 2018. Midterm elections tend to be referenda on the sitting administration. So that means that while the Republicans are structurally at an advantage in terms of the Senate, and the Senate races this coming year in 2018, that the, you know, how well the president is doing for his party and within his party can have an impact on the outcomes of those elections.
Well, here's a little glimpse of what we're seeing right now. There's a new study from the Pew Research Center that found that Republicans and Republican-leaning independents are less optimistic about the GOP's future compared with immediately after the election. Less optimism there. And Democrats, it's interesting, their optimism sank pretty quickly after the election, but has popped up a little again. Do those results mean anything to you?
Well, again, we're a long way out, but what's going on now that's interesting, and it's, again, at lower levels, are, you know, whether incumbents, Republican incumbents, are going to run again. In the case of Corker and Flake, no. So that makes their seats open seats. And so, you know, they're not necessarily going to be won by a Democrat, but if you're running two sort of non-incumbents against each other, then the possibilities are more open than if you're running against an incumbent. How many people have decided in the House and the Senate that they're not going to run again in the Republican, from the Republican Party? How much money are House and Senate members raising, both Democrats and Republicans? And some of the numbers that I've seen is that their Democrats are outraising Republicans for challenging them, challenging incumbent Republicans, as well as maintaining their own seats in the House and the Senate. And again, it's a steep climb for the Democrats in terms of holding the Senate seats that are up this year that are Democrats incumbents or taking on challengers, and also to switch the leadership in the House, the majority in the House. But again, that's part of what you're seeing in terms of these kind of optimistic or pessimistic numbers within the voters themselves.
And as we start to wrap up, Lily, just less than a minute left, do you think there's room for reconciliation now? This place that's a little uncomfortable for Republicans, is there room for both the establishment wing and the wing represented by Trump and what he represents to the Republican Party?
I mean, I think there's always opportunities for reconciliation. The, you know, part of the difficulty is if everybody's just angry tweeting all the time, it's harder. and that's the president, and that's, you know, his critics on the left and the right, and that doesn't necessarily open the doors for reconciliation or for cooperation. It doesn't even have to be reconciliation. It can be sort of cooperation to move agenda items forward.
We leave it there. Lily, thanks a lot for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
Lily Gorin's a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. Her published books include Women and the White House and Mad Men in Politics. And she was with us today to talk about the growing divisions within the Republican Party and what it could mean for the future of the GOP.